This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Jimmy Carter has expanded and redefined the role of an ex-president. We're about to find out what former First Lady Rosalynn Carter has been up to. She's personally and professionally involved in the issues surrounding caregiving, taking care of a sick loved one. Rosalynn Carter is the honorary chairperson of the Rosalynn Carter Institute for Human Development, whose mission is to understand the caregiving process. And she's the co-author of a new book for caregivers called Helping Yourself Help Others. Caregiving can radically change your life and alter the patterns of family life. Carter writes that caregiving has been part of her life since she was a girl. In 1940, her father was diagnosed with leukemia. He didn't want to stay in a hospital, so her mother took care of him at home.
My mother was 34 years old when my father got sick. I was the oldest child. I was 14. My little sister was 4 with two brothers in between. And my father got sick, and he was sick maybe for about 6 months. And we were devastated, the whole family was. That's one thing that we learn in studying caregiving, is that it affects the family relationships. But we were devastated, and my mother's an only child. The next year, 11 months later, her mother died. And my grandfather came to live with us. He was the father figure in our family then for years. He lived to be 95 years old, so though in the beginning he was a lot of help, still mother was tied down to take care of him for years and years and years.
What was it like for you to have a sick father at home? Were you responsible for any of his care?
Well, of course I tried to help mother. I was the oldest. I was a daughter, and I found out that most caregivers are women. But mother depended on me to help her. And I knew that he was not going to live, and of course you just feel helpless. I used to read to him, comb his hair, or do anything I could to try to make him happy. And also I had this terrible guilt feelings because I was only 13 years old, and as a child I had sometimes bad feelings about him. If he called me down or punished me or wouldn't let me go across the street to see my friend. This was when I was a little girl, little child. And I felt really guilty, thinking maybe if I had been better, he would have lived. I didn't realize until I was writing my autobiography and working through these things that that's normal for children who lose a parent by death or divorce. They feel guilty, like maybe they had something to do with it. One of the things that I hope this book will do is let caregivers know that it's all right to feel, that it's perfectly normal to feel guilty, because all caregivers do. Even if they're with someone they're taking care of 24 hours a day, they feel they might do it better, or they feel guilty because they get angry with the loved one they're taking care of. All these emotions are normal, and I think it's very helpful to know that. It helped me to know that it was all right for me to feel guilty.
Did your mother ever confide in you feelings about resentment or guilt during your father's illness or during the 25 years when she cared for your grandfather?
No, she never, ever complained, never. And, of course, she was devastated, and I knew that because she cried a lot. But when my father was, when we found out he was sick, and then, of course, when we were taking care of him and so forth. When I was writing the book, I asked her one day, if she ever suffered from burnout, just being completely overwhelmed and exhausted, or if she didn't ever get angry. And she said, no, Papa was good. He was just really good to take care of. And then she tucked her head a little bit and said, well, he did keep me awake all night in the middle of the night toward the end of his life. And she started talking about some things that had not been easy, but I never ever heard her complain about it before. And this was not complaining, this was kind of reflective.
You grew up watching your mother care for people, first your father and then your grandfather, and I wonder how that affected your feelings about the responsibility you did or didn't want to have to care for others when you grew up.
Well, it was a terrible time of my life. I was in the eighth grade, I suppose, the seventh grade maybe, when my father died, in the eighth grade the next year, and it was like nothing good ever happened. The war, World War II started right in the middle of that. It was, I look back on it, as a really, really difficult time in my life. But also, I can identify with people who have to take care of somebody all the time. And I even consider myself a caregiver now because my mother is almost 89 years old. She'll be 89 on Christmas Eve. She lives alone. She drives her car, which we worry about. I know she wants me at home, and I can't be there all the time. And I feel guilty about that, although I have a brother at home who takes, who can take good care of her if she needs him. But I still, I'm the daughter. I'm the oldest. She depended on me when my father was sick, and then to help with my grandfather, and she just likes for me to be there. So I can sympathize and understand the feelings of those who are responsible for someone else, for caring for someone else. And caregivers are affected financially, physically, emotionally when they have to take care of someone all the time, and so often are just feel they're really invisible. They feel left out because attention is almost always on the one who is ill or the one who needs care.
Could you talk a little bit about how in your own life you've decided to divide your time between the time that you give your mother to watch out for her and care for her and the time that you've, you know, decided to spend to your work and to other aspects of your family life?
Well, we have so many things going on at the Carter Center. I'm so involved in so many programs, that, and my mother understands that. She likes for me to be at home, and she knows that I can't be there all the time. And as I said, I feel very guilty about it. But when I am at home, she eats lunch with me almost every day. Spends the night with me if she doesn't feel good. She's had some health problems, and sometimes she's nervous about staying alone at night. And she doesn't want me to worry about her. I do, but she doesn't want me to. But also, I have a brother at home who has fixed a room on his house so that Mother can come and be with him if she's not feeling good. She can come spend the night with him. She likes to be in her own house. It's important to me to be there with her on holidays. I'm at home maybe a third of the time. I think Jimmy says we spend about a third of our time at the Carter Center, and we travel. We have so many programs, particularly in the developing world and in our conflict resolution programs and so forth, that we have to be gone a lot.
Well, a third of the time to be home and near a parent is actually comparatively a lot of time when you think of the number of people who are living very far away.
That's right.
From their parents and maybe spend a few days a year together.
And when I'm not at home, I call her. And the time I worry about is when we are overseas. We go to Africa a lot, visiting. We have health and agriculture programs there and conflict resolution programs and other places. And I can't always get her when I try. And that's when I worry about her most.
You've written that your grandfather died in 1966 during your husband's first gubernatorial campaign. Was it hard to take time off from the campaign to be with the family when your grandfather died? I think how hard it must be for people in public office who probably feel that they can't afford to take a minute away from campaigning when there's a personal tragedy to deal with.
I remember it as though it were today, because I was sitting in a restaurant with some people who were prospective supporters, and somebody came in and told me that Papa had died. And I just quit and went home. I had to. I just canceled my schedule because my mother, of course, needed me. And so I went home. But I don't remember now how long I stayed at home, probably just a week or so before I was back out on the campaign trail.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy lost the election that year. He ran for governor and lost. And so it was not long. And it was a brief campaign because our leading candidate had a heart attack and dropped out. And Lester Maddox mm-hmm. was running for governor. That left Lester Maddox in the race. And so Jimmy tried to find somebody else to run. He was a state senator at the time. And nobody else would run, so he decided to run for governor and didn't have about an 8-week campaign. It was about 8 weeks before the election, and we didn't win. But so I was not gone for very long and was at home then to be with Mother.
Rosalyn Carter is my guest. Her new book is called Helping Yourself Help Others, a book for caregivers. Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Rosalyn Carter. She's written a new book for caregivers called Helping Yourself Help Others. I know it was a very difficult transition for you and your husband to make after Jimmy Carter lost his reelection bid. And I wonder what it's been like for you now to see him getting hailed as one of the most important former presidents in recent history, hailed for the way he's redefined the role of ex-president.
Well, of course, I think he was one of our greatest presidents, too. But most of the things that we do don't get a lot of publicity. Purposely, for instance, we work on conflict resolution and human rights, and we have 26 health programs operating out of the Carter Center, mostly in Africa, with poor in the developing countries. We have agriculture programs teaching small farmers in mostly in Africa to increase their food production. And those, if we go into those countries, and the head of state gets credit for what's going on, then he really is gung-ho about the program. So we don't put our name on things like that. And with human rights efforts, if Jimmy writes a head of state, if one of the major human rights organizations comes to us and say we have a really tough problem with a head of state, then Jimmy can write him a letter or call him and say, I've heard this is going on in your country. I know it's not true. I hope you will look into it. And almost invariably, that leader will either let whoever he has in prison out or try to do something to overcome that situation.
Were you worried about him when he was in Haiti negotiating, even after the warplanes had taken off, the U.S. warplanes?
Well, we've been to Haiti. We were in Haiti 7 times with the election. We know all of those people. And Cedrus was in charge of security during the election when we were there, so we had known him well. And President Jonathan, we had known. He was on the Supreme Court, an older man, 81 years old. We had known all of these people, and we had come back from a trip to Africa, and Jim had a letter saying that Cedrus wanted to talk to him. Well, Cedrus and Aristide both had been trying to get Jimmy to negotiate for a good while. And anyway, for 3 or 4 days then before he went to Haiti, he'd been on the telephone with him. And I get in all the meetings when we're negotiating because I take notes. I have a good excuse to get in the meetings. And I was on the other telephone taking notes with the Cedrus phone calls. But then it was not appropriate for me to go with Sam Nunn and Colin Powell going with Jimmy. But he told me that if he did get the agreement, that he was going to stay because he wanted to be sure it was carried out. And so when he called me that night to tell me, he called me from the president's palace to tell me that they had just gotten the agreement, and he said that he was coming on and spend the night in Washington. And I said, I thought you said you're going to stay. And he said, well, Bill Clinton said he had enough to worry about without worrying about my security. And so I can tell you that I was thankful when I saw him get on that, when I saw that airplane take off.
Well, what do you think of the criticisms that have been leveled against your husband for negotiating with dictators like Raoul Cedras and cutting good deals for them, you know, because he's living well in South America now, and the United States government is helping him financially to live well?
Well, it doesn't really bother me because they people that make those statements are just uninformed. Those agreements had already been made in papers, an agreement that was signed with the United Nations help for granting them amnesty and so forth. All Jimmy did was just, they had signed the papers, they had never lived up to the agreement. And Jimmy's role was to get them to live up to the agreement, so he had nothing to do with offering them amnesty. And also, I think not only in that, but in North Korea and others, I think a lot of people that criticize just don't understand what conflict resolution is. You cannot go and say, you are bad and here's the good person, and if you don't agree to this, well, you can't do that and get any kind of agreement. And the conflict resolution is a science. I think just a lot of people just don't understand that.
Hillary Clinton has been criticized by many people for being too much the activist first lady, for getting too involved with policy. You were criticized yourself by some people for getting too involved with the president's decisions. And I wonder what you make of the criticisms of Hillary.
Well, I think, and her approval rating really went up after they first came into office. And I think a lot of the criticism now is just politics. Anybody trying to get it, Democrats are trying to get it, her husband will criticize the first lady. I hope after this election that will go away a little bit. But I think the role of first lady is changing as the role of women is changing. And hopefully it's easier. I think it's easier for Hillary than it was for me. You'll have to remember we were in the White House a long time ago. Amy Carter was 9 years old when we went to Washington. She's now 27. And I went to cabinet meetings. I went to Latin America. I was briefed regularly by the people from Latin America program. I was briefed on problems with the elderly by the counselor to on aging to the president, and attended the cabinet meetings. I got a lot of criticism for that, but I had campaigned all over the country on issues, telling people what Jimmy was going to do. And then when I went out in the country, which I did often, I wanted to be able to tell him what he was doing and to know why he was doing it. So I got a lot of criticism, but what you learn in politics is that it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to be criticized, so you may as well be criticized for doing the things you want to do.
I have one last question for you. Your new book is for caregivers. And, you know, mental illness is an issue that you've been devoting your time to for many years now. I wonder what your thoughts are on learning that former President Reagan, your former opponent, has Alzheimer's now.
Well, I think it's a tragedy for anybody who has Alzheimer's. My heart just goes out to the Reagan family. I have come in contact with a lot of people in this since I became interested in caregiving who suffer from Alzheimer's, and a lot of people, caregivers, husbands or wives of those who are affected. It is a very, very difficult situation to be in, and just a tragedy for any family. So, as I said, I just do sympathize with them in this situation.
I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
I enjoyed it.
Rosalind Carter is the author of a new book for people who are caring for sick loved ones. It's called Helping Yourself Help Others.